Welcome to Making Your Miles Count Production, an educational program to all Canadian lease owner-operators with your host, Robert Scaper.
Welcome to the Making Your Miles Count podcast, and today we're going to be talking about non-taxable benefits, very specifically two of the seven disadvantages of using the non-taxable benefits system. And we'll go very quickly over the seven, and then I'll focus very intently on two of the ones that I'd like to discuss today. First thing about non-taxable benefit is that it is complicated to understand, at least initially, when you first are introduced to it. And so it's a little bit complicated. Secondly, it is a little bit more costly than normal to operate the non-taxable benefit system. Comparatively, especially from self-employed to the incorporated non-taxable benefit system, it's generally about 2 to 2.5 times more work for an accountant to complete that. And that generally reflects in rates that you have to pay. It's usually somewhere in the vicinity of $500 to $800, maybe $1,000 to complete a self-employed owner-operator taxes. Whereas it's generally, it's about $2,500 to do a non-taxable benefit corporate return. The third disadvantage has to do with money in trust, and went very quickly into that. When you're self-employed, there's between 40 and 50% of all owner-operators in Canada make payments on last year's personal income tax return, and that they can make payments because it's an amount that is owing to Canada Revenue Agency, which is completely different than the system that is used with non-taxable benefit. Non-taxable benefit uses payroll and source deductions, and the taxes due are classified as money in trust, which is the most highly protected form of currency, I guess, in the free world. A high level of protections on there, and it's a very, very different. You can't make payments on money in trust. People go to jail if they grab money in trust, kind of a thing, if a lawyer does it, for instance. But so it's a little bit different. You have to plan your payments to Canada Revenue Agency a little bit more deliberately. That's the third disadvantage. The fourth is insurance and disability. If you're historically been making taxable income of $60,000, $65,000, and now you're only reporting $25,000, $30,000. Disability, if let's say you break your leg through either workers' compensation, WSIB, that kind of thing, provincial compensation, workers' compensation program, it is basically what the workers' compensation program does is it takes a look at what your T1 was in the previous year, and if instead of it showing 60, 65, it's now 25, 30, the benefits that you receive is basically half of what it used to be. And you have to get a very specific insurance to cover that differential. So that's the fourth one. The fifth one is Canada Pension Plan contributions. When you've historically been reporting 60, 65, you've been pretty much maximizing the CPP. But when you're suddenly 25, 30, then suddenly it's your Canada Pension Plan contribution has been significantly reduced. And when it comes to thinking about retirement long term, you have to deal with the specifics about an under contribution of Canada Pension. So you have to put more into RSPs, TFSAs, some other form of retirement plan. And the sixth disadvantage has to do with loans to a bank. If you've, historically, 60, 65, suddenly it's now 25, 30. A loans officer who doesn't quite know what's going on, is very sad for you. My poor guy here, you used to have 60, 65, now it's 25, 30. I can't borrow you any money. And generally, a charter bank, that's how they deal with situations. Caisse Populaire and credit unions do have a little bit more educated loans officers rather than the glorified tellers at chartered banks. and you can get a little bit better response where they can put back into your income non-taxable benefits, especially if it's, you know, $30,000-$40,000 a year. They should consider that. Not everyone does. It is a little bit more tenuous situation when it comes to a disadvantage. It's probably one of the top two or three major disadvantages, but young in life, it's a little bit more perilous. Older in life, getting loans at the banks, not nearly as bad usually. Liability is the seventh and final disadvantage of non-taxable benefits, and the primary reason that it's difficult is because it's a joint liability situation between both the accountant and the operator, and accountants generally don't like joint liability. They want to control everything themselves, so to speak, and that's a little bit of an issue. Like we said, our firm covers the liability issues, so it's not a factor. So, but what I want to talk about is the disadvantage number four and five. When it comes to insurance disability, it's relatively straightforward. We're talking about disability insurance. 95% of all disability insurance links the benefit of your disability to your T1. 95% of all policies. It's an automatic kind of thing. You have to specifically ask and say, listen, I don't want it to be tied to my T1. I want it to be tied to a specific number. And that is a very different policy. It may cost you a little bit extra, but of course the savings that you're having is much bigger than whatever it might cost you long-term anyway. So that being said, that is it is easily or relatively easy surmountable disadvantage. The fifth disadvantage or that I want to speak a little bit more in detail about is Canada Pension Plan contributions. It's pretty straightforward that you're not contributing the maximum amount of CPP, and so you have to, like I said, RSPs and TFSAs. Now, there is one other factor in here that it's not really a disadvantage that I want to talk about, but it has to do when it comes to your retirement and benefits and stuff like that. And that has to do with a little bit with life insurance. When you purchase either a life insurance policy or you purchase RSPs, TFSAs, and you're thinking about your retirement and keeping your family financed after you pass away, so to speak, it is a topic that is actually quite close to my mind and heart, and that has to do with the difference between term life insurance and whole life insurance. There's two very, very big differences in those two terms, terminologies. A term life insurance is basically you pay a certain premium per month or per year, but generally per month, and that regular monthly fee, it lasts for however long your term is, 10 years, 20 years, sometimes 30 years. You can get some that go right to life or 100, term to 100 or term to life or whatever they call it. But realistically, you choose a time frame that you want to pay insurance for. Generally, it's about 20 years. That's an awful lot of the norm in the industry. When it comes to whole life policies, there's actually that whole life is one name that and there's a whole bunch of other names, and I can maybe, for instance, tell you a lot of the disadvantages of whole life, and then you turn around and your insurance provider says, oh yeah, but we don't provide whole life policies, we provide this other one which does the exact same thing. Let me explain what a whole life policy or cash life or cash policy or whatever the terminology is at the time that you're talking to the guys, what they are actually using. Realistically, when an insurance provider combines life insurance policy and some form of an investment vehicle, and whether that investment vehicle is reflected in a cash redemption or whether it is put into a kitty, and that kitty is supposed to make investments so that it later on pays for the premium. That is combining the investment and insurance policy. And that is what, personally, I think is a horrible program or policy or to get involved with. Never combine your insurance with your investments. Now, there are hundreds of different ways in which an insurance salesman sells this combined policy, so to speak. They can talk about, well, if in the event in the future you need some cash, for instance, there is a cash value that you can pull out. You can borrow money from your own life insurance policy. You can do this with it. You can do that with it. And if you have some availability of cash or a loan of some sort, they're trying to sell you that, hey, you can do this with this extra money that's being accumulated in your insurance policy. That's a benefit for you. Realistically, it's the policy that is extremely, extremely expensive. Let me simplify it for you. Let's say, for instance, you can get a life insurance policy for $100 per month. And let's say that $100 policy gives you $100,000. And that is just a term policy. Let's say it's 20 years. And you're paying $100 for 20 years. And if you die during that time, you get $100,000. It's very expensive, actually, off the top of my head. But then there's another policy. It says, okay, you got a $100,000 policy here, but you give us $200. And then these are the list of all of the other things that you can do. You can borrow money out of the cash. You can do this, and it'll accumulate and then pay your premiums past the 20, that kind of thing. It brings some benefit other than a life insurance policy, and it has to do with cash or investments. The way these policies are created is that the investment, that extra $100 that you put into the kitty that they have control of, you don't have direct access to monitor, take a look at, or to reflect what is your return on investment for that extra $100. Is it truly benefiting you? Or could you just take $100, put it into a TFSA or a some sort of mutual fund, and what would the difference between doing it all under one policy or doing it in two separate transactions? When you do it in two separate transactions, the benefits are huge in your favor. When they're combined together, the policy holder, they get an unbelievably low rate of return. And there's several reasons for it. And some of them can be directly, you can point to that and say, okay, for instance, the cash policy, you can pull it out and there's no tax liability on there. Of course, there's no tax liability because you've put that money plus more into it in order to, so you're borrowing or getting back a little bit of a refund of your own money. And realistically, you're giving somebody else money, control of your money, on the off chance that maybe someday you would like some of it back. Now, there are even some policies that if you pass away, say halfway through the policy, and the cash value is maybe $3,000 or $5,000, and you get $100,000 from your life insurance policy, but that $5,000 or $3,000, that is the insurance company's proceeds. You don't even have that extra savings. Now, there are so many different types of policies. Some have that feature, some don't have that feature. But what I'm basically saying, as your accountant or as an accountant, I'm saying the policy or the policies that combine insurance and savings investments are horrible instruments, and just never do anything. Keep your insurance and your investment completely separate. That's what I'm stating. Basically, it just comes down to the policy that you sign. There is inherent disadvantage in there. I'll give you one final comparison. I've always said, for instance, I got a podcast talking about the difference between leasing and owning. Is it better to lease a truck or to own a truck? Realistically, the bottom line is if you have any option of owning, it is always better to own rather than to lease. The details in the contract of a lease are always in the favor of the leaser, and they're always against you. And if you take a perfect view, if everything works absolutely perfect for you, there might be very minimal difference between owning, but there's very, very rare you go right to the end of a policy and nothing unfavorably happened to you. So realistically, you have to be very careful, and that's why the bottom line is if you have any choice whatsoever, always own rather than lease. And sometimes the salesman will sort of twist your arm and say, you know what, your credit rating isn't that good, you need a little bit more down, this, that, the whole bunch of different whatever the going excuse is, you can't really afford to finance it, but we got a better deal for you. Here is a lease option, and the terms within that lease option are greatly in the favor of the financing company, and that's the reason why a salesman moves towards a lease, not because of the great advantage to you, but his commissions are 3-4 sometimes 5 times what it is in a financing situation. So it's a huge advantage to the salesman to lease it to you rather than to sell it to you, the truck. And it's the exact same scenario when it comes to whole life policies or cash policies or whatever terminology they use to combine a term life insurance policy and investments of some sort. If it's something other than 100% term, then it is a horrible product, and the salesman is making 3-5 sometimes 10-15 times commissions than it would with a term policy and an investment vehicle. And there's a reason why the commissions are so high, because it's extremely expensive to you. You are paying that extremely high commission, and they can flower a policy in 100 different ways, but you should be making a stance. Look, I want my life insurance to be term, and I want my investments to be independent of any life insurance policy. Keep them separate. Even if you could, probably one of the best things to do is even get one salesman to sell you, look, I'm just looking for term, not even looking for investments, just life insurance policy. Then go to another person and say, look, I'm just looking for investments, I'm not looking for life insurance, and keep them separate. If nobody's listening and they say, oh, what about this product? What about, walk away. Find somebody who will not twist an emotional plea to say, hey, what about this situation, this situation, this situation? Then what you really want is some whole life policy or whatever terminology they use at the time. And they flip these terminologies all the time, but basically it's a combined investment life insurance product, and that's what you want to stay away from. Same as lease versus own. This is something that I wanted to say. Many, many years ago, I had a client who I referred a because he needed life insurance because of the non-taxable benefits. I referred it to an individual, and I never fully checked out the person I was referring to, whether they, what they are looking to sell. I was very young and naive, I guess. I over-trusted the insurance guy. I didn't hear about him for a few months. After about 3 or 4 months, all of a sudden, I can't remember whether it was the client or the insurance agent. The insurance agent came back and chewed me out, saying that he signed this guy up on a policy, and now there's NSFs all over the place, and he's in all sorts of trouble. And I looked at it and I said, well, how much is his NSF? I thought it was a few hundred dollars. It ended up being like $872 or something. Now remember, this is 25, 30 years ago. So $872 policy. First thing I looked at, yes, it was a whole life policy. That's when I first started learning about these other instruments. And it was immensely expensive. And this guy was not a wealthy independent operator. He had a small family and he had to do it, but he was grossly overinsured with this huge giant policy. Of course, he's not going to be able to make nearly $900 a month payments on there. So ever since that time, I've been suspect about giving any type of validation or any nod to a particular agent, because they. Too many of them. Every time I do an interview or so, they say, "Oh yeah, we provide this and we provide that," and then yeah, and if they all, you know, we also provide whole life or cash value, or there's many other terminologies for it, of course. And then I say, "Well, wait a minute, I'm not a believer in that," and it seems like the majority of salesmen make their wealth. On these whole life policies, because the policies themselves produce a huge commission for them. And of course, the commission is out of your pocket. And so I haven't endorsed any insurance provider. If there is an insurance provider out there who understands non-taxable benefits and who is also adamant that they just do not sell these combined policies of investment and term life policies, I would endorse them. The problem is trying to find them. I suppose they could lie to me and say they will never sell it and then turn around and sell it, but I guess to some degree it is your responsibility to find out exactly what kind of life insurance policy you are buying and making sure that it's just a term policy so that it fits you accordingly in there. Now, these are life insurance issues and not totally in the disadvantages of non-taxable benefits, but if you're buying disability, generally you look also at life insurance at the same time. So that's why I'm talking about this today in this podcast. This is pretty much the only point that I'm trying to make today, and if you do know of an insurance guy who is an anti-whole life policy as I am, I would give that person a public endorsement if they wish, for sure. But like I said, they're very hard to find somebody. In my opinion, that it's a little bit more ethical. It's a cheap shot for me to say it's an unethical policy, because some people are extremely passionate about some of the benefits it does have. There has been, historically, I do know an advantage about 4 or 5 years ago. This would have been in 2017, 18, 19, somewhere in there. I had a relatively wealthy individual get a whole life policy and then be able to somehow convert it into a cash. They actually factored it and he was able to cash it out on a policy and convert a life insurance into a cash payout. That particular action is no longer legal. It was legal back then, and Canada is a little bit, we have an oligopoly when it comes to banks and insurance companies. There's only a handful of them here in Canada, and sometimes they get together and say, hey, we want to spur on this kind of a policy. So in order to do that, we have to lobby the government to provide this, and then they pass this law and they're able to sell a whole bunch of product. And eventually the government says, okay, it'll only be available for 2 years or 5 years or whatever it is. And then it cancels it out. That happens quite a bit in Canada when we're talking about insurance and a lot of banking policies and issues and tax issues where there's things that are only available for a short period of time. But I mean, that's Canada. There's very, very few of them around anymore. The only ones that are tend to be around are actually the negative ones, like the the passive versus active law that came out, which makes it extremely expensive for individuals to own their own property because the tax rate is so very high. Now we're getting 67% capital gains rather than 50% capital gains, so our taxes are going up. There's small changes like that happening, but there's not much more than four or five of them maximum at years. And depending on politics, usually there's very little to nothing ever changed on an annual basis. But that being said, just wanted to update you on this feature of the disadvantages and also insurance and term and investment vehicles. All right. Other than that, have a great trip.
Subscribing to this channel provides you regular access to professional advice on independent operators. If you want to support us, like, share, and turn on that notification.